It was a budget day today here in South Africa. Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana tabled the 2023 budget earlier today. Tough fiscal decisions had to be made in light of so many challenges facing the country at the moment, from state-owned entities that urgently need bailouts, amongst other things as well. The National Treasury Department finds itself having to come up with an above satisfactory budget amidst prolonged and debilitating power cuts, weaker global economic conditions, and rising inflation. Let's unpack this further. I'm joined on the line by Gilad Isaacs, a member of the Budget Justice Coalition, and Jerome Brinke, who is the director of Tax and Exchange Control Practice at Cliff Decker Hofmeyr Law Firm. Good evening to you both, and welcome to Africa Tonight.
Evening, thanks very much.
Good evening. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us this evening, gentlemen. Let me start with you, Gilad. This was described as a difficult budget, which forced Godongwana to walk a tight fiscal rope as he tried to stabilize the public purse while trying to meet public expectations. Has this budget met your expectations as the Budget Justice Coalition?
Excellent. Thanks very much. The short answer is no. And, you know, whilst there are difficult choices to be made, I think it's very important that we view this budget with quite a clear-eyed view. And despite the defensiveness of the minister who said this is not a austerity budget, the numbers tell a different story. Mm-hmm. The average, you know, it's very easy to stand in Parliament and say there's 100 billion more here, 30 billion more there, and so on. But what really matters is how that compares with the previous year and how that compares when one takes account of inflation, of increased need in population growth, and so on. And what we see is that over the three-year medium term, in real terms, that is taking account of inflation, there is a 1.2% average fall in non-interest expenditure and expenditure on social services, health, education, social grants, and so on. Mm-hmm. That amounts to 86 billion rand less than if we had moved in line with last year's budget. And of course, last year's budget already represented, over the last three or four years before that, hundreds of billions of rands in expenditure cuts. And we see, you know, this fall in health, it's a fall of 4.9% per user of public health care. We used to have 5,028 rand per year. Now it is 4,605. In education, it's a fall by 2.4%. That's a fall per learner of almost 1,000 rand. So you know there's been a significant undermining of expenditure. At the same time, the minister went to great pains to say how those at the upper end would receive tax relief and wouldn't see any increased taxes. So essentially, the lowest 80% of earners, the 80% who rely on public services, have received a cut in what they were receiving. And those of us who pay income tax in the upper 20% have seen a relief. And so it's a budget which essentially distributes money from the poor to the higher income earners.
Are you then saying that this was not a pro-poor budget, Gillard, because according to the minister, this was a pro-poor budget, which is vital amid the rising cost of living situation that we are facing at the moment?
It was not pro-poor. And you know, the minister is saying that to you know, and he also announces things in these sort of nominal big round amounts to obscure the fact that there is, you know, unequivocally a reduction in the expenditure which the poor rely on. And I've mentioned health and education, but if you take, for instance, this social relief of distress grant, which was a emergency grant under COVID, which has been reinstated a number of times at the level of 350 rand. That grant not only did not increase in line with inflation, but the line item of expenditure allocated for it fell from by about 25%, or 20% from 44 billion to 36 billion. So you know, the minister should just, you know, either he's completely out of touch with what it means to have a pro-poor budget, or he should stop lying to us and face facts and say, these are the unfortunate choices which I've made. I've cut spending, I've reduced social services, but that's what I think I need to do for these reasons.
Mm-hmm. But prior to the budget, Gillard, you warned, you cautioned that the allocation of funds and a reduction in spending to address the 400 billion Eskom debt must not be implemented to the detriment of other rights found within the Constitution. Now that we know that the government is going to take over Eskom debt, how do you think Minister Godongwana should have navigated this crisis, this debt crisis facing Eskom?
Yeah, I mean, the taking over of Eskom debt is a positive feature of this budget. There's no way that Eskom can deliver on the maintenance which it needs to do to increase the output from its existing fleet and other operational expenditures when it is facing the kind of interest bill which it pays each year based on its debt. So it's appropriate and long overdue for the fiscus to absorb some of this debt. There are a few more concerning elements. The first is what you mentioned, which is the sort of playing one form of expenditure off against another. The minister did allow for a increase in debt for this reason, which indicates that there is some fiscal room, in Treasury's mind. So the first is that we shouldn't, you know, allow Eskom to be seen as an excuse to undermine other expenditure items. Secondly, you know, when a corporate entity has been lent to, and that corporate entity finds itself in trouble, essentially those lenders have taken a risk and they've made a bad bet and they've lent to an entity which is essentially unable to adequately service that debt and remain a functioning provider of what it's meant to be doing. And in those circumstances, some of that pain should be borne by those lenders, by those bond holders. And, you know, a debt restructuring in a fuller sense hasn't occurred yet. There's been no emphasis on going to the debt holders and say, listen, you've made a bad bet, and so you've got to also have take a haircut on what you're owed here, and this pain is going to be shared. Mm-hmm. Lastly, the minister gives this proposes this relief measures, but wants to attach to it forms of conditionalities which are really outside of the purview of National Treasury, and which entrench a particular approach to energy provision in South Africa, which we would argue places an over-reliance on private sector energy provision.
Jerome Brink, it was always going to be a difficult budget, isn't it, amidst all these challenges that South Africa is facing at the moment? Your reflections of Godongwana's budget?
Yeah, thank you. I think we're in very difficult economic times, not only within South Africa, but globally, with, you know, still coming off the back of COVID-19, a big war that's waging in Europe, and a lot of other challenges that's being faced. So, you know, there's a very difficult balancing act that the minister has to sort of put into play from that perspective. I think what was at least very positive is that he answered the calls for some type of increase or expansion to the existing renewable energy tax incentives. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very welcome. And so I think businesses that are investing in solar, you know, they can also then cover a lot of the costs and increase the rollout of rooftop solar throughout South Africa. And if you look at a country like Vietnam, they also potentially had an electricity crisis, but due to reforms and tax incentives and especially in the rooftop solar space, they actually cured that within a very short space of time. So it definitely works. Mm-hmm. And that is really one of the massive challenges that we're facing from South African perspective, especially from the economy. You know, we lose so much money each day where there's these rolling blackouts. Mm-hmm. And I think linked to this also is something that I think not a lot of people would have expected, but an individual can also claim up to a maximum of 15,000 rand tax rebate on their rooftop solar. Mm-hmm. Which is also a very, very welcome addition and will hopefully also increase the uptake in rooftop solar. And it's not only good for, you know, changing South Africa's, you know, electricity sort of mix from heavily reliant on coal to green energy, which is obviously something that the whole world is moving towards to avert climate change. But it will hopefully also, you know, take us out of the place we're in relation to electricity. So at least from a tax policy perspective, there were some interesting things that came out in the budget, but yeah, difficult balancing act for the minister.
In addition, the budget provides inflation-related adjustments to the personal income tax tables, Jerome, the retirement tax tables, transfer duties, and excise duties for alcohol and tobacco as well.
Yes, it does. You know, as expected, the sin taxes have all gone up. So, you know, tobacco and spirits and wine and beers, you'll all be paying more for that. And government will be increasing its revenue in that respect, which is not surprising. It generally goes up every year. There was some relief, at least, on the RAF and fuel levy, which was around about 4 billion rand. And I think that'll benefit everyone. You know, due to the Ukraine war and a lot of other factors, fuel is very expensive at the moment. And a lot of that component is actually taxes. And so I think that's a very welcome sort of change or sort of thing that the government has done. And I think that'll be welcomed by everyone. Mm-hmm. And then in addition, there's about 9 billion rand tax relief on this renewable energy, these expanded incentives. And then otherwise, you know, the inflationary adjustments, inflationary brackets, you know, they are just really what they are. It's just linked to inflation, and inflation has been rising quite a bit recently. So I think everyone will be happy that at least, you know, on a sort of equalized basis, they're still paying the same amount of tax, even though they might have had a, let's say, inflationary adjustment to their salary.
Talking about the rising inflation, Jerome, the minister also announced increases to social grants, which are lower than inflation. Do you think this will cushion the poor against the rising cost of living?
Yeah, look, that's a very tricky question. And I guess it's a broader question as to whether it's, you know, enough and whether enough has been done about it. And I guess the one question is can government afford it? And I guess there's a big balancing act in terms of, you know, do you sort of resolve ESCOM's problems? Do you provide tax incentives here and there? And I guess there's many ways you can cut it. But I guess, you know, an increase in the grant that's below inflation will probably not be helpful. But then again, you know, you've got to weigh that up against all the different other balancing acts that the minister has to take into account.
The budget also comes as South Africa is bracing for the possibility of being a grey listed by the Financial Action Task Force before the week is over. Jerome, do you think the minister had the grey listing in his mind when he was putting together this budget?
Yes, absolutely. I think he would have. And, you know, there's a lot of work being done behind the scenes on that. And it's also linked to the credit rating agency's assessments later this year. But the grey listing is something that's been front of mind now for the last sort of year or so. And it's absolutely critical that the right type of changes and implementations are put into being. To avoid that grey listing, because obviously that will have great ramifications for everyone, negative ramifications. And I think he did have that in the back of the mind. Whether enough has been done, well, time will only tell. So we'll have to wait and see on that.
And of course, the decision of the Paris-based International Financial Crimes Watchdog will be known this coming Friday. Let me come back to you, Gilad. A big part of the work of the Budget Justice Coalition is to build people's participation and understanding of South Africa's budget and planning processes. How does this particular budget influence the work of the coalition, especially now during turbulent economic times? Gilad?
Yeah, I mean, I think in these times it's even more important that there's a wide range of voices represented. If we're talking about making trade-offs, then those aren't trade-offs or decisions which should be made simply by elite members of society, you know, and the underlying logic of our constitutional democracy are that there are avenues for participation of a wide range of the stakeholders. I should note what's extra worrying about the manner in which the minister has gone about this is, you know, not only is Treasury you know, very loath to sort of take on board any outside input. But actually, in some ways, Treasury's gone rogue on a number of issues. Yeah, we do not see in this budget commitments made in the state of the nation by the president. It's essentially what's been tabled directly contradicts promises made which the president made. And he has two instances. The first is that the president spoke about the transitioning of the SRD grant into a form of basic income. Not only is the allocation for the SRD is a cut, but it doesn't appear in any year beyond this forthcoming year. So it's not in the 2024-25 or 25-26 years. And the minister in an interview before the speech actually spoke quite derisively of the idea of basic income. And another example is the flagship presidential employment stimulus, You know, which has also actually provided quite successfully a range of important social job opportunities. And this is receives it's, it only appears four times in the whole like 200-page budget review in a number of obscure places. It's incorporated into other line items in the incoming year, but it does not appear in the outer 2 years of the medium-term expenditure framework either. So, you know, not only do we have a situation where National Treasury is views itself as a you know, law unto itself with regards to participation by the society, but it's actually prepared to table a budget which is in contradiction to the policy announcements of our country's president.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jerome spoke earlier about the 9 billion tax relief program to support South Africa's clean energy transition and increase electricity supply as well. But do you think, Gilad, that the issue of taxes has been adequately addressed in terms of benefits for the taxpayer? Gilad?
You know, I think that incentive is like a tricky one, because on the one hand, as we've heard, you know, it can spur the acquisition of solar panels, which is good for the environment and can help to reduce electricity demand. On the other hand, we do have to ask ourselves, who is it which is benefiting from this? And essentially, it's a 25% rebate for the small share of society, like myself and maybe others here, who can afford to lay out 80,000 rand or whatever for a solar system. And that is a tiny segment of society. There is no provision in this budget for the rollout of any form of solar or even increased solar geysers in low-income housing development, right? So, you know, even with something that looks innocuous like that, right, sure. This is and any tax incentive is essentially money spent, right? And so government's going to spend on assisting the three of us, like maybe, in acquiring solar, in opting out of the load shedding, the crisis, in reducing the resources available for the cross-subsidization of energy. And, you know, it doesn't offer any form of assistance to the vast majority of South Africans. So, you know, I think we've got to think very carefully about who is benefiting and how in these incentives.
Jerome, others are decrying the fact that this was not an SME-friendly budget. Do you agree, briefly, as we wrap up?
Look, I think from a tax perspective, you know, the SMEs are still probably some of the most undertaxed entities, and that's always been something that SARS and Treasury has always tried to, you know, increase and assist them with. And so I think, you know, in that respect, I guess that the question is always asked whether enough is being done to help them. There are special taxation regimes for them and SMEs. But whether there's enough to help them, especially with, you know, let's say, for example, electricity crises, you know, many large businesses are able to fund, you know, installation of solar plants and, you know, alternative energy sources. But it's the small businesses that really suffer. And so I guess the question is, was enough done from a renewable energy perspective to really help those SMEs to sort of, you know, fund their own energy diversification. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's the one big question, to see whether those incentives have done enough.
All right, gentlemen, unfortunately, we have to leave it there. Thank you so much for talking to us this evening.
Thank you so much.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. That was Gilad Isaacs, member of the Budget Justice Coalition, and Jerome Brink, who is the director of Tax and Exchange Control Practice at Cliff Decker Hofmeyer Law Firm. It is a minute before the